The only consistent thing is that everything is different in that it goes in cycles. You know, that it depends on what the management is thinking at the time. My intentional approach has been to tie innovation to the enterprise agenda, to the strategic planning process. And then creating that intention helps create an agenda for innovation that gives you the license to create an innovation strategy that links with the business to drive projects. But, you know, every company is a little bit different in how they approach it. And many times, you know, as innovation leaders, what I found is that you really have to find a way to insert yourself in that conversation to drive that. What I have found that is common is that, you know, companies have their own product development processes. You have to find a way to insert the innovation process there to drive really an intentional growth strategy with innovation.
Welcome to Season 6 of Alchemist X Innovators Inside, the podcast where we explore the world of corporate innovation and dive deep into the minds and stories of innovation thought leaders crafting the future. I am your host, Ian Bergman, and if you're an innovation agitator like me, then this is where you want to be. Moises, welcome. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
My pleasure, Ian. Thank you for the invitation.
Yeah, well, it's a Friday afternoon. It's kind of sounds like as good a time as any to be talking about the wonderful topic of corporate innovation. You know, for folks who may not know you, I am just really pleased to welcome Moises Noreña. You've got a fascinating career, actually, in kind of blue chip innovation. You've built innovation programs and done transformation at companies like Whirlpool, like Allstate, like Moen. Now you're working at a construction firm called MyTech that we're anxious to hear about. I can't wait to learn some of your lessons. Thanks again for joining us.
My pleasure. Yeah, there is no way I could have planned that career. I stumbled on it as I stumble with innovation for the most part. So you know, it's been fun, and I'll be happy to share my experiences.
Well, let's actually start there, because I love that. If there's any common theme that seems to come up in these discussions, it's that it's very, very hard to plan a career in innovation. And in fact, the people who have embraced it the most tend to be the folks who have, as you've said, taken a few risks, stumbled into things that have worked, learned some lessons, iterated, and built a career. I would love to hear a little bit more about your journey. So could you tell us just a little bit about who you are and how you got to be sitting here today?
Yeah, thank you. You know, I'll try to be brief. Nice, many years, so I could be talking about this for a long time. But I am originally from Mexico City, and I'm an architect by trade. So that's my bachelor's. And, you know, very early I got interested in computers because I was the last generations or classes that actually didn't use technology. So I learned the trade, you know, by hand.
Yeah.
So as we were all getting PCs in our houses and so forth, you know, I got very interested in that, and I ended up doing a master's in computer science, which led me to work for IBM in consulting. And, you know, later on, decided to do an MBA and come to Purdue University. So basically, I have three skills that I think, you know, are pretty useful in innovation. You know, design and understanding of humans, technology, and business. So, you know, now I didn't plan it that way, and I didn't intend it to use it in innovation. But when I got to Whirlpool, that was my first job here in the U.S., you know, Whirlpool was going through a massive transformation in innovation. And, you know, little by little, I ended up moving towards the innovation space. You know, I can share in more detail why I did that.
What did that mean at the time? Like a massive transformation, innovation. In my experience, people don't always actually know that it's happening, right? So what did that mean, and what did you see?
It was very intentional. And, you know, at the time, I don't think the concept of corporate innovation was broadly known. So Whirlpool was a company that was primarily focused on, you know, engineering and operational efficiency. And there was an intent to really become a consumer-oriented company with consumer products and drive from demand, from the consumer interest. So this transformation was to really create that demand for products, and the vehicle to achieve that was innovation. So what that meant was that Whirlpool was making innovation a business process ingrained in the systems, and was training people on understanding the actual process of generating ideas. Well, actually, before that, gathering insights, creating ideas.
I'm so glad you said that, by the way. I'm so glad you said that.
Yeah. And you know, this was a massive global initiative where people were being trained to be innovation mentors. They knew how to run this process so everyone can innovate. And, you know, and that caused a lot of traction at Whirlpool and other places. And I'll share a little more about how that drove, you know, some work I did with Notre Dame and other places. But that's how I got into innovation. I was really in the I was in the general management track at the time, and I was very frustrated because I was always being asked to drive more sales, and I was like, well, I can drive more sales if I have better products that people want. You know, I cannot force them to change their washer. But if I give them an excuse to do that, you know, they'll be able to do it. So that desire is what led me to innovation, really create things that people want. And, yes. You know, and the rest is history. So from there, you know, I moved on to other places. But really what allowed me to be successful at this role was this combination of, you know, left and right brain that could be creative, work in unstructured environments and come up with solutions that can really move the needle as it relates to growth for the company.
Amazing. And so you sort of fell into, but with a certain deliberate approach, this innovation track. You've taken that to some other firms, but I want to come back and maybe talk about some of your prior experiences. But as you've gone farther in your career and as you've joined other companies and worked in innovation there, what has been consistent? Can you maybe tell us a little bit about some of your work at these other firms and what you've seen that has kind of been consistent in the approach to innovation?
Well, when you ask what's consistent, what I'm going to say, the only consistent thing is that everything is different in that it goes in cycles, you know, yeah. That it depends on what the management is thinking at the time. But my intentional approach has been to tie innovation to the enterprise agenda, to the strategic planning process. And then creating that intention helps create an agenda for innovation that gives you the license to create an innovation strategy that links with the business to drive projects. So for me, that really has been the goal. But, you know, every company is a little bit different in how they approach it. And many times, you know, as innovation leaders, what I found is that you really have to find a way to insert yourself in that conversation to drive that. What have I found that is common is that, you know, companies have their own product development processes, and you have to find a way to insert the innovation process there to drive really an intentional growth strategy with innovation.
So much of our audience are people who, you know, at various levels, various roles within organizations who want to drive change, right? They see the possibility to make adjustments in a process to get closer to customer pain and needs, to drive change, take risks, but they struggle. So you talk about, you know, injecting an innovation approach and innovation mindset into individual processes. How do you go about doing that, either with maybe some specific examples from your past or even just kind of general advice?
Yeah. Well, you know, every company I've worked with is a little bit different, but one example probably that can resonate with people is what we did at Moen, you know, the plumbing company. And, you know, that I think that continues to date. But really, when you think about this company at the time, it was primarily focused on, you know, durability and style. So you think about, okay, very strong brand, you know, very well positioned in the market, but we want to drive growth. Okay, so you can come up and say innovate, and you know people can come up with some crazy ideas for, as my boss at the time used to say, like faucets that have lasers, you know, like you can come up with any idea. But when I think about this intentional approach, for me, it was really about understanding where do we want to drive the growth? And some of that may be organic, some may be inorganic, some may be core business, some may be category expansion. Understand how that growth is going to be planned. And that gives you the opportunity to identify in which areas is innovation going to be relevant, which can turn into the innovation strategy. So in the case of Moen, you know, the big transformation happened when we said, okay, we need to be appealing to other broader audience that really is interested in a more meaningful brand. So the brand went from being style and durability to becoming a water brand. You know, we bring water experiences to your house. And with that, we can really now start putting some emphasis in the areas where water is important in your house. So we develop pillars. We say we're going to be driving, water quality. We're going to be driving pleasurable experiences in the home, etc. So with that strategy, then you can target projects to that.
Yeah.
You can target those projects and then make intentional investments on whether I want to go and do that project versus I want to do another line for, you know, this customer. So that for me is what means, you know, being intentional and transforming the way you run your business with an innovation strategy tied to that.
So okay, thank you for sharing that, because I love that. And I want to see if we can make that just a little more real. I don't know about you, but one challenge that I see with corporate innovation is always that within the enterprise, you have a lot of, especially in engineering first firms, right, or product first firms, you have a lot of really smart people and a really smart experts who know how to solve problems, whatever the problem is, right? Which may not always be a good thing, but they know how to do things. That often leads, in my experience, to people either doing the same thing over and over again, or maybe kind of ignoring the customer. How do you bridge things like these pillars, this new framework for thinking about exploration and innovation against, as you say, water quality, pleasurable experiences, with the mindset and skills and expertise of engineers and product designers who, you know, pride themselves on their ability to quickly come to an answer and ship it?
No, it's for me, it's a combination of understanding a market need or a consumer need, or stands both together, with a clear intention of what you want to achieve with that, and then using these smart people to help drive solutions that address that. Okay, now, many times that solution may only be a technical solution, and I think that's when you really have to also insert, you know, the business acumen of different roles in an organization to understand, you know, how is that going to feed your market, what type of profitability it might drive, you know, what is it going to be the growth curve of that. So for me, the role of the innovation leader in this question that you're asking is really bring those constituencies together to create a point of view, and then prove that point of view through, you know, experimentation, through prototyping, through small introductions, through launches. And for me, that's the systematic process that allows you to really take the kernel of an idea into a new full product and potentially a product category.
And I want to put an exclamation point on that. I love the way you just framed that up, right? But you said something really key. You said prove that point of view through the data, the experimentation, and a deliberate process. And I think that's so important and also very, very hard to do. And I want to ask you a little bit about how you prove that point of view, right? Because I think often we're so used to working with vast quantities of quantitative data. Like, we have our sales figures, you have your customer satisfaction and return numbers, you have your manufacturing quality data, like whatever, we're swimming in data. In my experience, that often doesn't always really help us prove our point of view or disprove our point of view, especially when we're talking about something new. So what kind of data do you look for to help prove your point of view, to help get the whole team on side, all the stakeholders on side who are going to have to deliver a new concept?
I think that varies in the level of maturity that the idea that you have has. You know, in very early stages, I think you're really just doing some soft testing, you know, with concept testing with consumers, and just really taking a bunch of ideas that you can turn into concepts and then rank those concepts to say, okay, I have this bunch of things that I want to test. Once you narrow that down, I think it's really about what is the key question that we have to validate? What must be true for this product or this idea or this concept of our business? What must be true for us to be successful at it? And really try to eliminate all the noise and really focus on that kernel. And, you know, I think depending on the type of environment you're on, you know, when you're in a digital environment like we were at Allstate, you know, you can do it through an app, you can do it through a user group, you can do a fake website. When you are in an environment like Whirlpool or Moen, you have to build a physical prototype and put people in front of it, you know, and maybe put the product in a set of homes so you can test it. I give you an example of probably one of the most successful ideas at Whirlpool of that. And I think in those early stages, once you've proven that hypothesis, then you can start really going to the market and just seeing how it works in a smaller scale. Sometimes it's possible to do that, you know, when you have good trade partners. You know, I remember at the time we will work with Lowe's or Home Depot and say, can we do a soft launch of something in a given area?
Sure.
All the way to just putting just this in the open market and see how it works in that first version so you can really scale the product into a model line or so. So, you know, I don't know if I was able to address your question 100% where you were going to, but I think it really varies depending on the stage in which you're on and the market that you're trying to address.
Well, I think you certainly touched on what I consider to be a pretty critical step, right? Which is getting in front of customers in various ways and seeing what happens, and doing it at a time at which you can still iterate. You know, you dropped the leading comment, so let's go there. It sounds like you did something pretty interesting at Whirlpool. You know, we think of as a big, like, kind of like big, heavy appliances and hardware. It feels like something hard to test and iterate on. What happened there?
I like this example because it really tells a story about, you know, this prototyping of innovation. And, you know, the story goes that, you know, we were going through this transformation and, you know, somebody comes with insights. And one of the insights is, you know, we always target women and they are the decision makers when it comes to appliances. So let's flip that, you know, let's flip the orthodoxy and what will happen if we target appliances for men? So all kinds of ideas came up, you know, well, a refrigerator for beer, you know, and, you know, this and that, and it looks more masculine and what have you. So we put a bunch of appliances in homes in the area, you know, St. Joseph, Michigan, small town. And through observing what consumers were doing, we noticed that in addition to using the product for the beer or maybe some extra freezer space, they were using the space as counter because there are always tools in the garage. So it became a piece of furniture. We go there and say, you know, seems that they can leverage that. So why don't we put some hooks in the product so people can use that counter in a productive way? Long story short, what that drove is really an organizational brand called Gladiator brand. And really it's a retrofit for garages to organize your garage and make it not only look beautiful, but be functional. And
interesting.
To tell you how an idea that was completely different took us in a different direction by observing the consumer behavior.
And what was the magic insight? Because that is still a leap, right? You're observing the consumer behavior. You could easily have gone down the path of saying, oh, okay, like this has to be furniture as well. We're going to make sure that, you know, you've, like you said, you've got your hooks, you've got your flat space, et cetera, and kind of left it at that. So how did that magic insight pop up where like, oh man, there's a problem. There is a pain around organization, storage, and utility in the garage space?
It was really, I think, the refinement of the value proposition. So, you know, the initial value proposition idea was appliances targeted for men. You know, when we pivoted and said, it's really an organizational brand. And we hone in on that and then continue to develop the business concept around it until we realize that's the opportunity. Now let's size the market and let's go and develop a full line. And, you know, this is almost, I don't know, maybe it's close to 20 years. So, you know, over the years now, you're really refining that concept. But it was just the willingness to go there, you know, yeah. and being open to go to a market that didn't really fit with the company.
Well, and it makes sense. And honestly, I feel like we're checking off boxes on the corporate innovation bingo card, like willingness to go there, like risk and exploration and experimentation, right? It's taken 20 years. Well, iteration and partnership with the customer, right? Evolution, yeah. that's really cool. Well, okay, so let's fast forward. I feel like in your current role, maybe you're a little closer to some of your roots in trade and training and architecture. You're working at, I'm going to call it a construction firm. And why don't you tell me what it actually is?
Yeah. You know, this is interesting and also not planned. You know, I left architecture more than, let's see, I'm afraid to say these dates because it makes me feel very old.
Don't worry, don't worry, me too. I'm sure it was just last year.
You know, but it was 25 years ago or so. Yeah. And, you know, I didn't touch plans or, you know, designs in all that time because I was at Whirlpool, I was at Allstate, I was at Moen's over all these years. And turns out that Mitek was looking for someone that knew innovation that was an architect. So I came to Mitek and I'll tell you more about what I'm doing. But Mitek is a Berkshire Hathaway company. You know, it's very sizable in market share and in revenue. And the goal of Mitek is to transform how the world builds. And we're really a technology company. We enable the construction industry to be more efficient, to have less waste, and to have really an end-to-end solution through a concept of design, make, build. So Mitek is really interested in streamlining the production process that has been, you know, centuries in the making, where, you know, if you think about buildings, every building is one new innovation.
Mm-hmm. You know, every building is different. Constantly reinventing or iterating the wheel, if you will.
Exactly, every time. And you have a very fragmented space where, you know, there's lack of quality, there is, you know, waste, there is unpredictability. And Mitek is really seeking to address all these to make an approach that is end-to-end integration, where we have visualization problem solving, where we have data that allows to connect something from the design all the way to the actual site construction. So that's what Mitek does. And I'm part of this initiative within Mitek that, you know, is incubating a very transformative way of building at a larger scale. I cannot disclose too much about what that is, but it's really bringing, you know, principles of advanced manufacturing to construction and really seeking to reinvent how we do that. And, you know, thinking about my innovation journey, when I was at Whirlpool, Allstate and Moen, I was primarily focused on the front end of innovation. And my role was to convince people that we had to innovate and to teach them how to get off the ground. I've been here really in the back end of innovation, proving to myself and proving to the innovation philosophy that you only succeed if you just prototype, make it happen, is just grinding the idea, you know, and we have a very large team really working on that. The company's investing heavily on it and there are no PowerPoints. There are no, you know, market tests. We're just building prototypes and working with customers and just making it happen.
You know what? I mean, you're speaking my language as somebody who works with early stage digital tech startups, right? That's the thing. You prototype, you grind, and you make it happen. But you're doing this in the physical world and physical infrastructure.
And digital. And digital. Yeah, because this is really, Mitek is primarily a software company. So it's really about enabling others to achieve this.
Amazing.
And you do that, you know, through a combination of digital tools that facilitate the process in combination with equipment and construction materials. So it's really that integration. But Mitek is not in the business of building. We're in the business of enabling others to build.
So I have one question for you about Mitek before I want to pivot into a couple topics we were talking about before we started this recording. Why is now the right time for Mitek? I mean, I think we've been hearing and thinking about ways to improve, make more efficient, make more repeatable construction for decades. Why is now the right time for what you're doing?
Well, that time has been the right time forever. It's just that nobody has done it because it's a very old problem. Yeah. But for Mitek, it is because Mitek was a very disaggregated company. So there were multiple companies that were doing little pieces of that. Our CEO has been very intentional in creating this strategy of one Mitek, divesting the companies that don't leverage our end-to-end solution and investing in those companies that actually can become that integration. So that's why it's the moment for us to do that now, because it's really looking at this from an end-to-end perspective. We now have, I think, the right people, the right infrastructure to achieve that. And we're in a position to leverage, you know, our partners in the construction world to actually create this transformation.
Amazing. I can't wait to see what comes out of that. But I want to come to something that you and I were talking about before we started this recording. And just as a bit of context, I know because they write in, they ask questions. A lot of the people who listen to Innovators Inside are, you know, they're searching for those tips, those tricks, those lessons that they can apply in their job or maybe the next job that they want, and that they can apply to make a real difference in innovating inside a large enterprise, which often can feel, frankly, it's very discouraging. It can feel like you're kind of swimming upstream sometimes. You have had a pretty varied career and you have learned some lessons, and it sounds to me like you have distilled them into some principles and lessons that you can share. So can you tell me about the 10 commandments of innovation?
Yeah, well, that was kind of like a fun project I did about a year ago. And you know, my name is Moises, so I will have to come up with the 10 commandments. And I'll be happy to share them with you. We won't go through the whole thing here. We have some of them in YouTube. But the first one is thou shall define a purpose. And that talks about the importance of really creating a strategy that is meaningful in the world. So I was talking about Moen, for example, the idea of becoming the water brand. You know, that's a very different thing that I want to sell more faucets. You know, and not only that inspires your organization, but also helps you create a strategic alignment. So that's one of the commandments. You know, others are define innovation for your company. You know, what it really means for me to innovate. Thou shalt align and enrich your company's strategy. Thou shalt identify and implement the tools needed to innovate. So what is your innovation process? And, we can keep going. But that's really the set of advice I have for innovation. I call it the Moses 10 Commandments for innovation and sustainable growth, because for me it's also important that is sustainable. And I also would like to share a little bit of other tools that I brought to the market in terms of learning how to innovate. If you're okay, I'll just provide a short story about how this came about. Before I left Whirlpool, we had a lot of people benchmarking Whirlpool for innovation practices. And turns out that University of Notre Dame is very close to Whirlpool. So a partnership was formed to create a program to certify corporate leaders in the innovation practices. So really help them understand what it takes to innovate. One of the challenges of that was that we didn't want to bring a very specific approach to innovation that Whirlpool had that probably would not necessarily apply to everyone. So we, together by looking at, all the innovation processes that exist in the market, I have a ton of friends, consultants that have their own exclusive, unique process for innovation and so forth. And we looked at all that and distilled it into a very simple concept we call the unifying innovation method. And the idea of this is that any company at any stage could leverage this framework to bring innovation to their company and execute it. So that was one of the core parts of that curriculum. And you know, that program has continued. I don't know in what class they are. And other people have become innovation certified mentors. And this is culminating actually with a very interesting thing that I actually, turns out it was yesterday, that I have a partnership with a colleague in Santiago de Chile. And she was very interested in this concept. And she said, the companies in the US have a lot of resources and there are many consultants and Latin America doesn't really have a lot of this. Would you be interested in writing a book to help people understand what this is? So the book came out yesterday. It's called Innovation Architecture, A Universal Approach.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. It was written in Spanish. So we're really intending to help this Latin American community. And I'm looking forward to potentially translating that to English for our English-speaking colleagues in the near future.
Well, and I think you should. I'll be honest. I work in corporate innovation in multiple markets around the world, and there are varying levels of financial, human, and other resources available. But I will say, I think the markets that have the most to spend on innovation, advice, on consultancies, et cetera, sometimes just make the least progress, right? Because you can get swamped in frameworks. And I think, I'm kind of saying this, and I'm curious if you agree, but you also just, you have to take action. And I feel like a simple playbook with a couple like step-by-step principles, like, hey, paint by numbers 1, 2, 3, 4 to learn the pattern might be a little more useful than a 12-month big five consultancy study.
Yep, that was intent. So, that process has been implemented with few companies in Latin America by Sandra Diaz. She's the head of Ematris. That's the company that launched it. And that's what she's found. And she's primarily helping, smaller companies, startups, public companies. Yeah. So it has proven that this is truly a universal approach, which, we're happy to share with everyone.
Amazing. And we'll make sure we link to all this in the show notes, especially for the Spanish speakers in the audience or the people who want to practice. But so I have one question for you, but kind of on the principles, on the commandments, but also on this universal architecture. I would hypothesize or sort of state that focusing on the problem and falling in love with the problem and not a solution is actually one of the hardest things for people that are trying to drive innovation inside companies to do, because every incentive, every cultural attribute is aligned toward efficiently delivering a solution to the market. Do you agree? And how do you think about that in the context of your commandments?
Can you clarify the question? When you say the problem, you're saying, I'm going to make sure I understand the question, that teams tend to be fixated in the problem they're trying to solve.
Customers have a problem. Customers have a pain, a problem. They want to be clean. They want to feel proud of their space. They want to do, et cetera. And immersing yourself in that problem without jumping to solutions, I think is a pretty hard thing. And
I see what you mean. Yeah. Well, I absolutely agree. I mean, for me, that's why this was the first commandment, which is, define the purpose. What is it that you're really trying to do? And, when we look at successful companies in innovation, we're all familiar with Apple. They're really focusing on what the consumer wants. Mm-hmm. The technology comes or the solutions come. And I think that tends to be the case I've observed in companies that, are led by their founder or they have a good heritage of that, because these people usually live that problem and they want to solve it. And that's ingrained in the company culture. Companies that you know, have been around for 100 years, evolve into being led by sales.
Yes.
You know, and they don't care too much about consumers' problems. They care much more about how many gadgets you're going to sell. And for me, that's a huge difference. And going back to this idea of defining the purpose and energizing the organization around that purpose is what can drive, you know, change and really focus on the right things.
So I spent a bunch of time at Microsoft, and it's really interesting because I think for folks that haven't really closely paid attention, I think there's a bunch of people who would think of Microsoft as an innovative company, and like it's not. It actually never really has been, and that's not a bad thing actually. But your point on the difference between a founder-led culture and a sales-led culture, and the pendulum swing of what that does, you know, at a scale of 100,000 to 200,000 employees is so true. And it's so fascinating. And I, you know, I lived through the transition from the Gates to Ballmer era and then into the Nadella era. And boy, did that pendulum swing at that company.
I can imagine. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be fascinating.
It's really fascinating. And you know what? Luckily, there literally have been books written on it. And I'm sure there will be more. Well, Moises, thank you so much for this conversation. I think this is really fascinating. If you're okay with it, I want to play just a little bit of a fun game just to get to know you a little better, and we'll see what comes out of it. So real simple, I'm just going to ask you some rapid-fire questions. Don't think about them, just answer. Sound good?
Yeah.
All right, you mentioned Apple. Apple or Android?
Apple.
All the way. Tell me why.
All the way. Integration, consumer experience. Craftsmanship.
I love it. And I'm not going to judge. I'm not going to judge as I hold up my Android. Okay. So space tech or ocean tech?
Ocean tech.
Tell me about that one.
I love the idea of going out in space, but I think our world really needs fixing. And I think we can do a lot about it.
You know, and that makes a lot of sense to me. And there's something else, though. I think, like, you know, as people answer this in my mind, sometimes I see them thinking about exploration versus mystery, right? Mm-hmm. And there is so much we don't know about our own world. Yeah. And I think that is really, really cool. Okay. What is the best piece of advice you've ever received?
Trust your intuition.
Trust your intuition. Yeah, that's a hard question to answer when I'm telling you. You have to answer really quickly. Trust your intuition. Okay. I had a fifth grade teacher, Mrs. Fawcett, who I will never forget. Unbelievable. And at some point, she looked at the whole class. I think we were doing a multiple choice test or something. And she's like, trust your gut. Your first answer is almost always right.
Yeah.
Why is that?
I think it has to do a little bit with my personality, you know, very analytical person, you know, sometimes taking time to make decisions and realizing that, you know, I could have shortened the time to make those decisions. Also, this career journey we talked about, you know, I would be lying if I said it was easy. You know, I struggled with these changes from architecture to computer science to insurance, you know, it's and you know, when I look at this now in the rearview mirror, you know, it turned out great. But at the time, I would not feel it that way. So I think knowing that you're making the right choices and just trust that those choices are going to be okay. You know, it's an important thing as I think of my kids and people, you know, that take steps into the unknown.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, building on that, I think one of the things that we sometimes forget is that intuition is informed by data and experience. Right? Like your intuition about anything involving innovation, building out enterprises, building out products is probably going to be pretty different than your intuition about how to perhaps, I don't know, best paint the landscape. Although if you now tell me you're a landscape painter, that example is going to be pretty bad.
Yeah, I'm a painter.
Nuts. You know, as I was saying it, I was like, this looks like you might just be a painter.
That's my other life. Yeah, that painting behind me is mine, and I have a bunch of others in the basement. Yeah.
Okay. So that's amazing. Well, so clearly we're going to have to take a clip out of this and make it on social so people can see that, because that's a beautiful piece of art.
Yeah, I have my alter ego. It's called Don Moy. It's the painter that lives a different life in the arts world while I'm not innovating.
Awesome. All right. Well, I've just got one more question for you then. You're a pretty thoughtful and studious person. Do you have a favorite innovator, famous innovator from the present day or the past that you think is just worth studying, that you think people should pay attention to?
There are so many, but Edison is probably one of my favorites. You know, there's so much that one can learn from him. And in all aspects, I mean, he was definitely the experimentator, but he also had a lot of political savviness. So he was really a true technical, but also, you know, political and business person. So for me, he's one of the best. But I love Steve Jobs' story, of course, being an Apple person.
There was a really interesting book I read, and this keeps happening to me. Live on the podcast, I'm going to forget the name of it, but it was basically about, I think, the battle of wills and technologies and the invention of the light bulb. And I think, you know, Edison came across in this story. It was semi-historical fiction. You know, Edison came across in this story as a pretty brutal person. But that also seems to be a kind of a consistent trait when we're talking about some of the best innovators in the world.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at all the bios, I don't know if you've read Walter Isaacson's The Innovators.
Of course.
Most of them are like that. I mean, I think the innovators that we're talking about here, like you and I, were probably different than those guys. But yeah, when you look at those, I mean, even Elon Musk, of course, we're seeing that right now.
We're seeing it right now. It's playing out. And yeah. I got to tell you, I've tried to live by a principle for a lot of my career, and I've been lucky that I've had the ability to live this principle of like, I don't work with assholes. I really try not to work with assholes.
Yeah.
And I think that makes my life better, but you know what? I think there's a place for that if you actually want to drive change in the world sometimes. And I think that's a really interesting balance for people of different personality types to think about.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, I think I'm with you when it comes to that. And when I look at, you know, the commandments, we didn't get to that, but for me, there are a couple. You know, one is thou shalt act with humility. And for me, that means you don't always have to know everything. And the other one is you have to collaborate. That's at least my philosophy on innovation. And I know that might differ from some of these people we're referring to.
Well, I also think there is a really, really big difference between bending the world to your will and driving kind of like step function change that way versus, steering and shaping an organization to be able to be adaptable, to keep current in the world, to keep reinventing itself. And I think those are different things. And they're both very important. Well, Moises, thank you so much for joining us on Innovators Inside. For folks that maybe are interested in staying in touch with you, following your work, what's the best way? Are you on LinkedIn? Should they be looking out for the English version of your book?
Yeah, the LinkedIn, obviously. My website is moisesnorena.com, so they can find me there. And my email is very easy. It's my name. So moises@norena.me. And I'm always open to networking and talking about innovation.
Incredible. Well, thanks so much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure. I really appreciate it. And I wish you a wonderful rest of your day and going into the weekend.
Likewise. Thank you.
Cheers. And that's a wrap for today's episode of Alchemist X Innovators Inside. Thanks for listening. If you found value in today's discussion, be sure to subscribe to our podcast and check out our segments on YouTube. Links and follow-ups are in the show notes. And if you have questions you want us to feature in future episodes, email innovators@alchemistaccelerator.com. Stay tuned for more insider stories and practical insights from leaders crafting our future.